While it might seem strange, it's actually a revelation from God that we don't need revelation from God to know that He exists. St. Paul says as much in his letter to the Romans. Now, of course, most people don't engage in rational arguments to come to know of God's existence. They receive the grace of faith at baptism. Nevertheless, it is important to recognize that we can know and can know with certainty that God exists, and that it is not a mere blind belief. This makes sense if we remember that God created us in His image precisely in order that we might come to know Him and love Him. It would be strange if our human nature was not equipped with the tools to come to know He exists. It would also be strange if God's existence were not evident in some way in the things that He has made. Throughout history, there have been many attempts, some more successful than others, to prove definitively that God exists. This was even done without the benefit of Christian revelation, but we'll be focusing on what are considered the most successful and demonstrative arguments, the so-called five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas. Here's the first way, as best I can in now less than 5 minutes. We can see in nature that there is motion, and this means not just motion from place to place, but any kind of change, a falling rock, the heating of metal, a child becoming an adult, etc. Now, any particular motion or change only happens when two things are true. First, that a thing has the ability to move or change in that particular way. This is called its potency or potentiality, like when a metal has a potency to conduct heat. And second, when something brings about that potency, like when something actually hot causes the metal to actually conduct heat. If that heat isn't applied to the metal, it does not become actually hot, even though it still has the potency to become hot. Now, this general principle can be applied to any kind of motion or change we see in nature. Things that can do something only do it when a mover, or several movers, cause them to do it. But this principle also applies to the mover. For example, it doesn't satisfy us to say that the fire that heats the metal is just there, without any explanation. The fire itself also requires a mover, as does that mover or movers, and so forth, as long as we have a mover that is itself in motion. But if this were to go on forever, all the way back into eternity, mover after mover onto infinity, we never come to a first mover that would account for the power of all the intermediate movers. Now, you might object that, well, that's just fine, because my great-grandparents or grandparents or even parents aren't alive anymore, but I exist, so I don't really need them to exist to explain my existence. Maybe this just goes on forever from all eternity. And that theoretically could be true, but that's not the kind of series of movers we're talking about here. The case of parents and grandparents, etc., is more like a series of dominoes falling. Once the previous domino hits the next one, it ceases to be a cause. Just like once your father begets you, he ceases to be a cause of your existence. And it's technically possible that that could go on forever as far back as you go. But there's a different kind of series of movers we can identify in changes and motions we observe in nature, and this is a series of movers that cannot possibly go on to infinity. We can illustrate that kind of series with a clearer example. If I see lots of train cars on a track passing in front of me, that motion isn't explained by saying that there are an infinite number of cars, any more than asking who kicked me is explained by saying that the leg attached to the foot that kicked me is infinitely long. I need the engine to explain how any of those cars are moving, because all the intermediate movers, that is, each car in the series, is both causing the motion of the next car and being moved by the previous car, simultaneously, here and now. Eventually, you reach a point where there has to be something that provides the power of moving for everything else. You need the engine. Or take a wristwatch. The motion of the hands is not explained by saying that there are an infinite number of gears in the watch. You need to come to the spring, which gives all those gears the power to turn the others, here and now, and thus move the hands. So in this way, we can show God's existence with even the simplest phenomenon. Take a book sitting on a desk. How is it doing that? The desk supports it, here and now. But what about the desk? The ground supports it, here and now, allowing it to support the book, here and now. And the ground? Well, the solidity of the earth. And the solidity of the earth? Well, among other things, the force of gravity. All of them working here and now to allow that book to sit on the desk. If gravity were not working here and now, I would not be able to observe that book on that desk. But gravity isn't self-explanatory either. Is a scientist satisfied with, well, gravity just is? No. Gravity is a force that requires a cause as well. It is not as if gravity just necessarily exists without any explanation. Perhaps you can assign other more fundamental cosmic causes for gravity, But the point is, at some point, you necessarily must arrive at a mover that is not itself moved, a cause that is not itself caused. Otherwise, you could not observe the phenomenon you observe here and now. It's just not possible, without the abandonment of reason, to conclude that intermediate movers, which are themselves moved, do not require a first mover at the beginning of the series. The existence of a first mover is a necessary conclusion, not a hypothesis or an arbitrary end to a series that we just posit for the heck of it. And the first mover is what we call God. Sure, you need God's revelation to know many things about God, for example, that he is loving, merciful, etc., but we can know with certainty that he exists, and that's pretty cool.